Hey, baseball fans, it's time to swing big on your bets this season. Step up to the plate with an odds boost token from BetMGM, an official sports betting partner of Major League Baseball. No opt-in is required. Just log into your BetMGM account to receive your odds boost token. Then, place a bet on any MLB game and activate your token. If your boosted bet hits, you'll score a bigger payout, no matter the showdown. BetMGM is your betting home for baseball. Major League Baseball trademarks used with permission. BetMGM and GameSense remind you to play responsibly. See BetMGM.com for terms. 21 plus only. This U.S. promotion offer not available in Mississippi, New York, Nevada, Ontario, or Puerto Rico. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. Available in the U.S. For New York, call 877-8-HOPE-NY or text HOPE-NY-467-369. For Arizona, call 1-800-NEXT-STEP. For Massachusetts, 1-800-327-5050. For Iowa, 1-800-BETS-OFF. For Puerto Rico, 1-800-981-0023. Subject to eligibility requirements. Rewards vary and expire in 1 to 7 days. In partnership with Kansas Crossing Casino and Hotel.
Why choose a Sleep Number smart bed?
Can I make my side softer?
Can I make my side firmer?
Can we sleep cooler?
Sleep Number does that. Cools up to 8 times faster and lets you choose your ideal comfort on either side. Your Sleep Number setting. It's the Sleep Number Everything Smart Bed Sale. Every smart bed and base are on sale during our Memorial Day event. Up to 50% off, plus free home delivery. Limited time. Exclusively to Sleep Number store near you. Learn more at sleepnumber.com.
That's a gay ass podcast.
What? That's a gay ass podcast.
A what?
A really, really, really gay podcast that we call That's a Gay Ass Podcast.
That's a gay ass name for a gay ass podcast.
Welcome back to That's a Gay Ass Podcast, the podcast that asks, whose fault is it that you're gay? It is me, Eric Williams, and this week we have the 6'7", the 6'7" actor Timothy Hughes on the podcast. He made headlines when he snatched a Trump flag out of someone's hand during a performance of Frozen on Broadway. I first discovered Tim when he was in the original Broadway cast of Hadestown, looking like a snack. He's also been in the Greatest Showman film as the strong man. He was in Sweeney Todd. He was in Chaplin on Broadway, and he's done a lot more. He also just got engaged just like a few days ago to a Jew, if I might add. So enjoy this episode with Timothy Hughes.
Tim goddamn Hughes is on That's a Gay Ass Podcast. And Tim, I'm a controversial gay journalist, so I'm going to ask you a very controversial question. The Greatest Showman was the best-selling album of 2018. Tim, did you see any of that coin? Were you able to buy your Fire Island home? Tell the girls what they need to know.
Oh my God. Okay, truth be told, no. Didn't see a coin of the album.
Fuck.
I know. We sang for the auditions. We sang on the movie, but they had, do you remember all the videos of, yes, all of those voices? Like, most of the people didn't make the movie, but they did make the album. So they all made a lot of money off that album, not in the movie.
And yet you were in the movie and
not
did not
the
make
album.
The album money.
Unless you had like a solo. So if you like came into just to record your solo on the album, like my buddy Daniel Everidge, played Lord of Leeds, he sings one line in Come Alive and he's made bank from that album.
Okay, don't give me dollars, don't give me numbers, but would I be gagged if I heard the actual number?
Yes, I think so. I was gagged.
Oh, Tim, yeah. Then let's get into fantasy life. If you were to have made...
But the movie still, like, the movie still pays me. So, like, so I'm still making money from the movie, which is great.
Okay. So then let's manifest that you continue to make the movie money, mm-hmm. and all of a sudden they re-release The Greatest Showman and you find yourself with an extra fucking boatload. What is Timothy Hughes spending his new check on? Is it real estate? Are you buying a Balenciaga kitchen, which is just all the appliances made out of Balenciaga fabric?
I was going to say, I don't know a Balenciaga kitchen.
I'm just trying to really roll with the fantasy here.
I think definitely real estate. I do already own, which is...
Tell me more. Where does she own?
In Manhattan, two bedrooms.
Tim, mazel tov.
Thank you. And I actually think with like a re-release of that movie or another feature film that like pays a lot in residuals, we would do big renovations on the lake house.
You have a lake house?
Mm-hmm.
And is this a lake house that is within driving distance of New York City that you go to and you need to just get away, take off your shirt and take photos with trees in the background?
Yes, put on your Speedo and take pictures.
Well, that's a great visual for many reasons. But before I get into like the official podcast question, you brought up a couple of things that are important to me. Number one.
Yes.
You said we, meaning you and your man. And I've done very important research. Your man has the last name of Cohen. Now he is a Jewess. Is this correct?
He is. Yes, he is.
Tell me, have you always been into nice Jewish boys or is this your first?
This is my first.
Again, mazel. Yeah. How long have you guys been together?
About 3 years.
Okay. And if I were to ask you how you two met, is that a triggering question? Are you okay to answer?
No, not a triggering question at all. A lovely question. So he works for the Ali Forney Center and the amazing charity that works to support, feed, and house homeless LGBTQ youth. Most people know it as the charity that Bea Arthur gave her money to. Shout out, Bea. Hey, Bea. Thanks. Thank you. And my management team, my representation as an actor, they get a table at the big benefit for the LA Forney Center every year. So I'd recently signed with them and was asked to be one of the guests at the table, show up to this like fancy, beautiful night at Cipriani's Wall Street. And the person checking me in was my now boyfriend with like binders of people coming. And I was like, who's that? And I always tell this like really meet cute story. Like later on, I was pulled in every direction at this party. And then everybody was sitting down at their table and I had no idea what table I was at. And like from across the Cipriani's ballroom, we caught eyes and I was like, he's going to know where I'm sitting. So I came up to him and I was like, I know that this is your event and this is a big night for you, but do you happen to know where I'm sitting? And he was like, I do know where you're sitting. So we met at that event and then met up the next day and have been together ever since.
Tim, you know I have some follow-ups here because you met the next day is not enough for me. You're at this event. You say, I'm such a scared little bird. I don't know where my table is. Could you tell me, sweet Jewish man, where to go? And then he said, follow me. Meanwhile, you're 12 feet tall. How tall is he?
Not 12 feet tall. He's about 5'8".
He's like, okay, perfect. Even better. He's like, come follow me. He's sort of squeaking down the ballroom floors. Just, you know, in terms of height sounds. And then you sit down, you say to your manager, God, the help here is really cute.
Yeah,
next thing you know, you slide into his DMs or he slides into yours. How does the flirtation lead to date?
There's like an after party of drinks where I was like talking with him and meeting a bunch of his friends. And then he gets wrapped up in like, because it's his event, big business, can't find him. I leave that evening. And as I'm going to bed, I try to slip into his DMs, finding him on Instagram. It was like after midnight. And as I find him, like looking up him on like the Ali Forney website, he has already sent me a message.
Oh, that's good. Yeah. Oh, that's, and so of course your sort of heart skipped a beat. And then
the crazy thing is then I like taught the next morning and was down in Midtown and we were just chatting on Instagram and I was like, where do you live? And he was like, oh, I'm currently staying in Hell's Kitchen. And I was literally on the corner of where he lived while we were talking.
And so is that when you were like, well, then let's just hang out now?
Yeah.
Okay.
That's why it happened so quickly. Yeah.
The universe was doing her thing.
Seriously, just like forcing it to happen.
Now my gay journalism hat fully on. Did the first kiss happen at the first date?
Yes, of course. Yes.
Obviously with a good one too. And I'll just let our imaginations run for whatever happened next, because the rest is her street. Well,
appreciate that. Appreciate that.
Tim, of course. It's just so lovely, because I know a lot of people who follow you are fans of your career as well. They should be. I mean, you've done such incredible things, but I'm glad that you're on this gay podcast, because we get to get into like the gay shit. Like, for example, you mentioned about your lake house, you in a Speedo. If you come from Wisconsin, you're 6'7", sort of like taking up space physically, but also as a gay person in the Midwest. When did you allow yourself to say, I'm a fucking gay guy who wants to put on this tiny fucking Speedo? Were you always able to be proudly a fagatrini, as I call us? Or did it take you many years of life to be like, I deserve this gay ass Speedo?
The Speedo specifically was a harder sell. Like, that was definitely support from my boyfriend. He does a really good job of bringing people into the lake community. So we have branded it as hashtag gay lake.
Hell yeah.
Yeah, which is great. And it's actually like, it's happening. But with that branding came the uniform of the Speedo. So I literally actually, here's the true story. The first time that I was going to spend a week in P-Town, I didn't have the gay uniform of a Speedo. And I went, and my boyfriend was like, you have to have one for P-Town. And I was like, I have to have one? Like, why can't I just wear like my like Hercules little like booty shorts swimsuit? And he was like, no, you have to have one. I think you should have one. So I went to one of those like overpriced Chelsea boutique stores.
Oh, God.
I know, which that guy like randomly, he still, he like must live in my neighborhood or something. He sees me all the time. But I bought my first Speedo there, and then I just became hooked. So now I love him.
That's why I kind of identify with the same thing, because the first time you wear it is the hardest, because it's like you don't know how you're going to feel in it, how if people are going to be staring at you. But then once you put it on, it's sort of like it takes away the mystery and the danger of it, and it just feels pretty fucking freeing.
For sure. Now, going back to the Midwest, and like my mother has a hot tub in the backyard in Wisconsin, like wearing the Speedo into the hot tub still is like a delicate dance of, you know, I'm not like full on comfortable with that all the time, but
that's okay. It's like, it's as adults, I feel like we have to have this interesting balance of like being our full gay ass selves. But then when we're back in Wisconsin with our families, with our straight families, like there is a dance. The gay uniform doesn't always have to be the Wisconsin uniform. And we just have to learn to figure out like what that balance is. But since we are bringing up the Midwest, Tim Hughes, I'm going to ask you the famous gay ass podcast question, which is, whose fault is it that you're gay? Who do we blame, babe?
To be honest, I blame, tell me if you've gotten this one before, JFK Jr.
Every fucking week, another person comes in here and says JFK Jr. No, what the fuck are you talking about?
I just remember the JFK Jr. People magazine cover. Like my mother was definitely getting People magazine. I think still does. And that cover was influential in my
sexiest
life.
Man alive.
Yeah. And I remember it like strategically. I like strategically kept it at the top of the magazines next to the couch for a very, very long time.
Yeah, just to have it in your field of vision.
Yeah, because I didn't know what I didn't know what this feeling was, but it was, I do blame him. I do blame him.
Is it, I mean, it's a great answer. Is it his preppiness that spoke to your hunger for JFK Jr.? Was it the beautiful head of hair? Was it a man in a suit that you wanted to unbutton the white chemise? What was it about JFK Jr. himself that made you so soaking?
I think it was like a combination of all of those beautiful details that you point out. I think it was like the fanciness of the hair. Like it just was like the full head of hair. It was like the beauty. that beautiful balance of being handsome, but also beautiful.
Pretty. Yeah.
Pretty. It was the pretty boy.
No, I totally get that. You know what's so funny is that when you first brought this man up, I of course know that he is beautiful, but my first memory is a Jewish one, duh, because I was at Jewish sleepaway camp and he died while I was there. And my mom, I just remember thinking it was so Jewish mother of her. I get back from camp and she was like, Eric, I didn't want to tell you this, but JFK Jr. died while you were gone. And I was like, by the way, she's not from New York, but that's my voice for her. And she was like, I didn't want to tell you, but JFK Jr. did die. And I was like, oh, and she was like, yeah, I didn't want to upset you while you were at Camp Sabra in the Lake of the Ozarks. And I was like, thank you so much for protecting my emotional health. This feels like it's more for you. But like, right. I feel like whenever a Kennedy dies, our mothers are the most affected.
Well, until it was JFK Jr.
Right. And then it was you.
And then I realized, I think also because he was like married to the most beautiful, like gorgeous blonde woman who I can't even remember her name because I wasn't interested.
If you and I both went to NYU Tisch, shout out.
Yes, shout out. Hey, NYU.
Did you live up to the Gay by May headline of you go to college straight, come out by the end of freshman year? Or were you already out before you left?
I was sophomore year.
Gay by sophomore year of NYU.
Yeah. Sophomore year, came out post-Thanksgiving to my mother. I was going to do it in front of the whole family, and then I like didn't. And so I did it as my mother was driving me to the airport. I was like, I have to tell you something. And I was like, but don't tell the rest of the family. And I never had any doubt that my family was going to be supportive. It's a little bit more complicated for me. My father had passed away right before my senior year. So I feel like the
senior year of high school.
Yeah. So the mental capacity to like come out as like the idea that it would possibly be a burden to my own mental health and my family's, like, I think was why it was pushed to the back burner for as long as it could be. That probably would have been the time. Like there was no reason why I wouldn't have felt comfortable doing that in high school.
Right.
But then that tragedy kind of struck and delayed the coming out. But I told my mother on the way to the airport, and I was like, don't tell the rest of the family. Like, I want to tell everybody in person and not do it on a phone call. And we're all going to be together for Christmas in like a couple weeks. I got off that flight in New York and everybody knew.
Your mom went from People Magazine to Star. Your mom
she
went
was
from
like,
People
she
Magazine
like activated
to
the phone tree. TMZ. She was like the gay mom phone tree. She was like, call, let everybody know.
You know, bless her, because at least while she maybe didn't exactly respect your boundaries in that moment, she did a lot of the heavy lifting for you.
For sure. My sister said it best. She was like, I'm really mad that you didn't tell me first. She was like, but you would never have let it like lived it down if you didn't tell mom first. So,
and that's how that's also how I feel as not only a nice Jewish boy, but just like a gay boy and his mother has a very specific relationship. And I feel like we sort of like hold up our moms as much as they hold us up. And so if you had told anybody first, she probably would have been devastated.
For sure. For sure.
You are working in theater, which is obviously one of the gayest art forms, but I would say that you are pretty straight presenting as a person and performer. So was it actually a pretty big shock to your mom or to those people? Or follow up, did your Midwesternness create the straight presenting person that you were? And that's, does that make any sense?
Yes, for sure. When I first came out, my mother said, the first things out of her mouth were, what about Katie? Which I kind of want to make t-shirts.
What about Katie?
Yeah, yeah. Because Katie was like one of my best friends in college, and she was like tall, gorgeous, blonde. And like the first time my mother came to visit New York, like I think I like ran through Union Square and like I picked up this like blonde girl in my arms and she like swung her around. So I think there was some like family picture that she took of us that day in her mind. But also, she was fully prepared and had been considering it for years that I was gay. And she always told me that like both my dad and her knew.
Really?
Yeah. I mean, I like it wasn't really I would play with Barbies. I said to my mother, I was like, I used to make my Barbies figure skate to the soundtrack of Sleepless in Seattle. Like, there was no way I was going
to. We need
to
take a moment to address how that is maybe the gayest statement that's been said on this gay podcast. You have your Barbies ice skate, figure skate
to
the soundtrack
of Sleepless in Seattle.
Yeah.
I'm writing something, and I actually wrote that line, and I was like, oh, this, it's a good one, and it's 100% accurate.
Well, I think that there's also a beautiful bond between gay children and romantic comedies. Something about a straight man in that romantic comedy showing his emotions maybe makes it be like, oh, it's actually okay to be a fully formed human and not just like the straight dude that I'm being told I have to be, which is has no feelings and goes to the factory. But you have also said in interviews that you, your sister performing is what sort of inspired you to get into it.
For sure.
What were your, if we're looking back at you in high school, what roles did you fucking slay?
Well, I'll tell you first, because I just finished doing Joseph at Sacramento Music Circus.
Oh, yes.
And my sister was Potiphar's wife when she was like 16 or 17. And I remember she had this like pink boa and she got this like long, like silver nail. And she'd be like, come and lie with me, love. And I was hooked. I was like, I was like, do I want to be Potiphar's wife? Do I want to be in this show? Do I want it to be all of the above? Roles that I killed in high school. I think my like breakout star performance was Bud Frump, show stealing comedy in How to Succeed.
Oh my God, huge.
Yeah, physical comedy galore. And then my senior year, they chose Anything Goes for me. So Billy Crocker, tap dancing, singing, song and dance man, classic Cole Porter. I've always loved singing Cole Porter. Those are my
The dancing, how did the dancing come to be? Because it's not like a natural, yeah, you're a guy that, I know that you played basketball because how could you not? But like, when did you find the time to learn how to dance?
I was always like putting on performances in my basement. There would be like a big pile of costume clothing, and I would find I grew up with a lot of girls on the block, not J-Lo, but like actual girls on the block,
the hookers of Wisconsin.
Yes, and I would cast them in all supporting parts, and I would give myself the lead role of like every Disney performance that I could. I remember my friend Kate still tells me, she was like, one time you complimented me on my solo, because I allowed her to do the opening for Lion King, and she did like a Circle of Life dance, and she was like, it was like, it meant a lot to me that you complimented my performance. And I was like,
sounds like you were kind of a queeny bitchy. Here I am being like, what is it like being straight presenting? Cut to you as like the cuntiest, gayest 8-year-old.
Seriously, in like a blue, like bedazzled skirt as like the genie in Aladdin, and like playing both roles. Like, I was doing it all. So there, yes, certain times, maybe straight presenting. Like, I think I know, and because I also, it was my sister and then two brothers than me. Like, I know how to.
Yeah.
Code switch in that sense. And that's been part of how I've had certain levels of success as an actor, because code switching is, you know, is also acting. But I think as far as like being myself and feeling comfortable with it, I've always been pretty consistent in who I am when I'm not like as the default personality.
Yeah. Well, it sounds like clearly you grew up in a environment where your parents made it okay to figure skate your Barbies to Sleepless in Seattle, to do your productions.
Actually figure skating. Like, I remember one of my favorite Christmas gifts ever was not having to use my brother's hand-me-down hockey skates and actually getting a pair of black figure skates.
Chic. Wait, that's so crazy, because I was told that I had to wear figure skates when I ice skated because I had narrow feet. But clearly I just like, my parents could tell that like I had wanted nothing to do with ice skating, because I have three straight brothers who all were hockey players, And
wow. Are you the youngest?
I'm the middle. So I have an older brother who was like hockey. I have a twin brother, hockey. My younger brother, I guess, wasn't really hockey, but he was still straight. So like whatever. But when we would go to ice skate, I would be like, Dad, watch this. Watch me do a triple axel, quote unquote. And I would have my Caucasian colored fucking ice skate.
Like cream or white?
Cream. Like, I'm just trying to like let you picture the most like feminine.
Like full looking. Tonya Harding, my lace is broken skate. Like,
I was given Tonya Harding figure skates, and I would just like be doing as many spins as I could at the Webster Groves hockey rink as my brothers were fucking body checking each other into the walls. And I just like, it was so like affirming to wear figure skates as a kid. And I think eventually I did get made fun of for it, but you could not tell me nothing in those boots, bitch.
Oh yeah.
What about your, so if you don't mind, I would love to hear a little bit about your dad, because if he and your mom were giving you this environment of like allowing you to embrace who you were, what was it like having a dad that encouraged you to be who you were in a place that not necessarily that was the norm?
My dad was 6'8". He played basketball in college. And like, of course, was like always coaching the boys team, like helping coach, myself included, like since I was in third grade. Like I started, he and another dad who played in college together started, both had sons at the same age, so started a team. And then I grew up playing with them and playing way too intensely for any third grader, in my opinion. So he always had like a coach mentality, and was really, really good at being like the gentle coach, like not the one that ever led with like,
God bless. Like,
I know, he was really wonderful in that sense, always taking the other side of like the head coach was like in a little bit more firm and stern about it. And then he would be like the gentle, more, thoughtful, one that would like be able to have discussions one-on-one with me. So when I was not wanting to play sports anymore, I think my dad was a little bit caught off guard with not being able to like fulfill his coaching duties, his like fatherly coaching duties. And my junior year, the last show that my father saw me in was, I played Oberon in A Midsummer Night's Dream. And we were doing this like wild, like I dyed my hair like red, and it was like I would come out to James Brown music, and we had a very we had a wonderful director who Mr. Tommy Lewick, who directed a lot of the productions at my public high school, and my dad would come after work, and he would come and sit in the theater and study Shakespeare. He would study like what I was doing, and I would see his glasses, like I would see like the reflection of like this 6'8" man being the only one in the audience, sitting there and studying what I was doing and what my passion now was, so that he could have those coach-like conversations with me, so that he still could feel like actively participating in my life. Because I was the youngest, like that was also the time when I was the only one left in the house. So he had the time to really focus on that, and then create a lot of like one-on-one moments. And he'd be like, now that guy playing puck, he's really good, right? And I was like, he's very good. Yeah, he's really, and he's like, he's really, what he's doing here is really funny and unique. And it was such a beautiful role model to see a man kind of be like out of his element, as far as the like athletic coach history that he was like so ingrained in for most of his life, step out of that comfort zone and really embrace me as who I am and what I wanted to do, and then also like go the extra mile to figure out and learn for himself what that meant for how he was going to participate in that. It was beautiful. I mean, it's like, I was robbed of that because that like months later he passed away. But it is how I like in that spirit, like I always want to continue to learn from that beautiful example.
It's such a beautiful, I mean, when you said you would see the reflection from his glasses in the audience, I'm so there with you. And I think that what to me feels so meaningful is that a man who had no experience or knowledge humbled himself so that his son could feel affirmed,
yeah,
and seen. And that is an incredible dad. And I'm just like, whenever I hear stories like that, it makes me so grateful for parents like that, because I think that especially when you are a gay kid, it is very easy to feel singled out and alone and like the freak of the family. And I very much, you know, one of my stories I tell now is that I have the opposite story as you. My mother is 4'11". My dad is 5'7". I'm 6'2". My twin brother is 5'4". I mean, I was the freak.
Wow.
And I was not only the freak height wise, but theater wise, gay wise. And so my parents, of course, did many things to make me feel seen, but I also did feel like a huge freak. And so when I hear that story, it's just like, it goes so much further than just he was learning about Shakespeare.
Right.
It's actually that he was like telling his son that his interests and passions meant something to him, and not just to, you know, the world, but to your dad. So I'm so grateful that you told that story, because I know it must be so many mixed emotions to think back on that, but I really just so appreciate your openness there. And I think it's also really inspiring to see that you come from this family of athletes and of people who clearly supported you in a way that you have grown this career that's pretty fucking nuts. I mean, if we go into some of your credits, if you don't mind, you of course did The Greatest Showman. For anybody who doesn't know Tim, he played the strong man in the film. You recently were in Sweeney Todd on Broadway with Josh Groban, Annalee Ashford, God bless. First concert I ever saw was with my mother, Josh Groban. Shout out. You did.
Was the concert at like 5 p.m.?
It was at, speaking of hockey, it was at the like hockey arena in St. Louis, Missouri, where I'm from. And I just remember being so happy because I could sit down the whole time, because I was so worried that all the concert videos I had seen, people were always like jumping. And I was like, no one's like jumping to "You Raised Me." So it was very like, I was like, is he going to sing Per Te? Literally, I was like the Italian aria. Anywho, you did Frozen on Broadway. You were, of course, Hades Town original cast. Broadway debut in Chaplin. Mm-hmm. But before I get into the Broadway of it all, you were also Frankenstein's monster and Young Frankenstein in the St. Louis Muni.
I was, yeah.
Anytime I have a delicious man on this podcast who did shows at the Muni, what was your experience as a gay man at St. Louis, and were you hooking up with the ensemble members of Young Frankenstein?
That was my second time. Oh, no, that was my third time in St. Louis, actually.
So you were sort of a big man on campus.
Oh, yeah. What campus? Webster? Like,
drag us.
No, because I did St. Louis Rep first.
Oh.
Yeah, I did Cabaret there. And of course, like the crew works at Webster. And then I did Adam's Family at the Muni. And then I did Young Frankenstein. But I originally did Young Frankenstein at Main State Music Theater. And it was one of those crazy things where I was coming from a different contract, so I was like a week late. So I was learning, because the big thing was like in the original Young Frankenstein, Schuller Hensley, like once we get to the Putting on the Ritz dance, he like, you know, fakes his way off stage, and then they do like a lot of like shadow puppet work, and it's another ensemble member who is like blasted onto a screen actually doing all the dancing. But my like claim to fame in this role was I'm going to do all the actual tapping. So I had been sent the Put on the Ritz choreography before this first contract, and they would have me on these like 7-inch platform shoes for the role, and when I would dance I would just wear my regular tap shoes. But I had to learn the whole show so quickly because when I got there, the director had, I think, lost his mother. So he was leaving. So we learned it all in one day. Like, we worked together for one day. And on the lunch break, I was reviewing the choreography in those big shoes. And he was like, can you do that number in those shoes? And I said, no, absolutely not. And he was like, well, you're doing it now. And I was like, well, do you want me to make all the sounds or do you want me to do this number in those shoes? And he was like, I would love for you to do the number in those shoes. So that became like my claim to fame. And then I did it at the Muni, and they put these on these like 7 foot platform, 7 inch platform shoes. They put these huge taps. and then mic'd my shoes so that I actually had to start making all the sounds, which was thrilling. It was like very, very thrilling. And actually, when that is the show that led me, that kind of planted the seeds to how I got Greatest Showman, because Greatest Showman was originally looking for a giant who could either dance on stilts or dance in like big platform shoes. And I asked Mike Isaacson, the artistic director of the Muni, I was like, I know you have the archive. I was like, I've caught the attention of the director from this upcoming musical movie, and he wants to see me dance in like these platform shoes. And he sent me a small clip of my number and Putting on the Ritz.
Shout out.
That helped me like plant the seeds and got the director of Greatest Showman interested in working with me. I didn't even end up getting the role of the giant. I just ended up like getting on his good side, going through the whole audition process and then dancing for my own track of like one of the other oddities. And
the universe did her thing.
For sure.
Well, I love to hear the role of St. Louis Muni in your history and your career, because I was and producer Nathaniel, we were both Muni teens.
I love the Muni so much.
So a lot of our first early Spank Bank memories were picturing the men traveling in from all over the country to random St. Louis, Missouri. We were like, we would take photos with the actors at the tailgate after the show. Like, it was like,
oh yeah.
Literally before you got in here, Nathaniel and I were talking about one guy from the shows we would do. And like, I wonder where he is now. We had crusty hard towels because of our memories. Anywho, that's not what you were wanting to hear about the Muni, but... That's what happened. That's just
my
story.
Yeah.
And I'm sticking to it. Emphasis on sticky. So if we do get into some of your other fun stories from your career, when you were doing Frozen, you made all these fucking headlines when someone held a Trump flag up in like the front row. And then you snatched
it
out of...
No. He walked it down. He was not.
Oh, he
in the front
walked
row.
It down?
Yeah,
even fucking worse.
That's why I clocked something was off, because somebody was like kind of running down the aisle during the curtain call. And it was weird because it was the first time that I worked with Disney. It was the first time where they had given like a speech about the dogs, like doing like a bomb sniffing dogs around the theater was new to me. So I was like, oh, this is interesting new safety protocol, like for a Broadway show. This felt very odd. Mm-hmm. And then there was some like pushback, and things were happening because of like the colorblind casting in our show was ruffling some feathers for people who were like, well, that, you know, that princess is white, or like that prince is supposed to be white. So there was already like my guard was up from that week, because I was like, oh, this was the temperature was a little bit higher at the theater to begin with. And then I see somebody like running down the aisle. So like I clocked danger before he came down. He was like, I think he like got like a balcony TKTSC. He did not pay for the front row and then stood up at the end. No way. He came running down.
That motherfucker went down the mezzanine stairs, took his stupid Trump flag, waved it in your faces. And then this 6'7" man, what was your costume? What would you call that?
It was a hidden folk.
You're wearing your hidden folk costume. It makes headlines. And I'm assuming this was the lead up to the 2016 election. Is that the, or was this it after he'd been elected?
No, this was, it said after, I think it said re-elect Trump 2020.
Oh,
I think it was in 2018.
I see. To me, what's so funny, and by funny, I mean so embarrassing about the whole story, is that people consistently who get angry when you cast a black person in a role that was in an animated film, a white person. I'm just like, it's animated, A of all, B of all.
Yeah, it's a mermaid.
You care so much about that this mermaid. You care so much.
This guy, I think, had, people had sent me things that he, was trolling all of Disney parks. Like, I don't even think it was specifically our show. Like,
he was on a national tour of trolling.
Of hatred. Yeah, yeah. Yeah, I don't really know what it was. Because if it was really a political, motivation, then why, you couldn't get a ticket to Hamilton? Like, why would you come to our show? Like,
yeah, exactly. There's a lot of more shows to make a bigger, well, I hope he's doing horribly. And I'm grateful to you.
I'm assuming he is.
I'm sure he is too. And I'm grateful to you for taking that moment.
It was fabric work. You know, it was all on the wrist. It was like,
and you could do it again if you needed to.
I know how to work fabric.
Sweetie, don't get it twisted. You also know how to work tights because you played Buddy the Elf in Elf the Musical.
I did.
I played Buddy the Elf as well.
Where?
And I did the tour in 2014.
Oh my God, that's
amazing.
And
again in 2018. And I think it only makes sense then we should both put the costume on and kiss.
Okay, yeah, that makes sense.
Are you cool if we photograph it or should we just keep it between you and me?
I think we can photograph it. I think, okay. Yeah.
And then we'll do it as a fundraiser.
For Ali Forney Center.
whatever you want.
Yeah.
In addition to that question I just asked, I would love to get into some Broadway hot takes. Are you cool if I ask you some Broadway hot take questions?
Yeah, love it.
Timothy Hughes.
Yes.
Have you ever left a show at intermission?
No. I did leave a show that didn't have an intermission.
That bad, huh?
That was my first time ever. Yes.
How long ago was it? I don't want to know the show because I want to protect your safety, but how long ago?
Recently.
Even better. Oh my God.
I won't dare say it, but I've never left a show at intermission because I always think there's something to celebrate. And I also think some of the best stories are some of the worst shows that I've seen.
Totally.
I remember when I saw Wonderland. Did you see Wonderland?
I did not.
It was a collective experience for people who survived being at that show.
Oh, it's like trauma bonding?
Acts.
Yeah.
And act two really went off the rails in such a wild way that the audience got the giggles at the show. They were like,
we can't believe we're watching what's happening.
We can't believe we're still here and we can't believe what's happening on stage. And it was a bonding experience for anybody who survived.
Well, that's beautiful theater lore when you can say that you were at the show that closed after, four and a half performances because it was sort of universally agreed that it was shocking that it got to Broadway.
Yeah.
Now I'm trying to think if there's any shows like that that I was shocked that I was able to see.
Nothing shocks me anymore about what makes it to Broadway.
Yeah, well, speaking of, are you also pissed that Variety is doing Actors on Actors for the first time with Broadway stars and they did not pair Patti LuPone with Nicole Scherzinger?
Who was paired?
Patty is with George Clooney, the famous Broadway actor.
Yes, that's a no.
The other one they did not do is Robin Herder paired with Megan Hilty to give us a smash callback. But listen, I'm very happy Variety is doing Actors on Actors for Broadway. God, thank God. God bless. But
wait, I haven't seen these yet.
The news broke
amazing.
All of 4 hours ago on the day we're recording this. So I'm really... making.
Oh my God! This is fresh tea.
Yeah, this is very fresh tea. So
okay, yeah. The Jake Gyllenhaal, George Clooney, Kieran Culkin. No. These are not Broadway people.
Exactly, but that's a Broadway hot take. Then, do you feel any sort of resentment that they are not casting the Sutton Fosters that they used to, and they're more relying on stunt casting? Or do you find that it is a necessary way to keep the commercial Broadway world alive?
I find it incredibly frustrating at times, and a very slippery slope. that they're relying on a TV or movie star's name to sell a show instead of focusing on the actual show itself and the creation of something really wonderful.
Totally.
It always comes back to me, to Fran Lebowitz for me. Like Fran Lebowitz did that. You remember Pretend It's a City? This series that she did on Netflix?
Oh, yeah, yeah, yeah.
Well, originally that was like a 2002 like documentary where she sits down with Martin Scorsese called Public Speaking. Oh. And they're talking about how the AIDS epidemic was so awful for all of the creatives across ballet and opera and musical theater specifically. And she was like, one of the things that they don't really talk about is like, we also lost a really intelligent audience. We lost people who knew when that actor was having an off night or when that ballerina wasn't on their leg. And ever since then, it's been kind of like a simplifying, dumbing down of what we do and what we produce.
Damn.
Which I think still is a lot of what we see produce on Broadway. And I do think that the casting of certain named celebrities in, let's say, Othello, no shade to their performances. I haven't seen it. But like, when did we become a theatrical world that needed a name above William Shakespeare and like right. a name above Othello to sell this ticket? Like that shouldn't be the case. Like that is a masterpiece of a show.
100%. Can I also just echo, like, it's so often that when we do talk about the people we lost to the AIDS crisis, when it comes to creativity, we often think about the artists themselves, but we oftentimes don't talk about the audience. And I think that that's a really, I'm glad that you brought that up. And that conversation between Fran and Marty, because we did lose on every single facet of culture a group of people who not only created, but also championed true, unique stories and performances. I mean, I was saying to Nathaniel before we recorded that what frustrates me about Broadway right now is that Oh Mary is a fluke and it's not the rule. You know, to me, the rule should be, let's champion these fucking genius voices who are not George Clooney. And by the way, no shade to George Clooney. God bless. Like, make your tequila, do your 8 shows a week. Love that for us. But like, that's the exception that Cola Scola has to smash hit. Like, right. It should be, to me, a no-brainer that we're constantly looking for the exciting voices. And not just looking for the agent who has a client who is a household name that will do Othello. So I completely co-sign that.
I also think it's a byproduct of social media and like the instant gratification world that we live in. That if it isn't a name recognition of an actor, then it's a name recognition of a movie that we know. Or of an entity that we know that is an immediate hook in, which I don't know how we change that.
It'll be interesting.
Yeah, because I think you're right. Oh Mary is kind of the one, is like a prime example of something that just was absolutely fantastic and rooted in like crazy wild like downtown theater.
Yes.
That made it big. Like, when's the last time we saw that happen?
If it doesn't make the entire, you know, industry want to focus on exciting voices, it at least inspires one producer, two producers, like, you know, like it's a long game situation. But speaking of long, unfortunately, I have to get towards the end of this gay ass interview. And before I ask you the final podcast question, Tim,
yes.
Something that I know you're asked about often that I've of course mentioned your height. I've mentioned how hot you are just because it's something I've had to sort of do in my own personal constitution. But if someone was out at a bar And you're just like tired of like anybody giving you a, oh, whoa, how's the air up there? You're so tall, whatever. What is a way someone can actually tell you that you're hot, that you actually enjoy? I get on my little step stool. I'm at the bar. I say, Tim, blank, 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 blank. What am I saying that actually is a nice flirt that makes you feel good? And if you just want to say, like, can I squeeze your arm? If that's what gets you going, it can be that. Truly, sky's the limit.
This is going to be a little bit of a roundabout answer to this question.
Please.
I don't know if I have the specifics of what I would want said, but if it is going to be, like, height related, if it is going to be...
Or you could say it shouldn't be height related.
No, I'm okay with it, because I also know it's like, you know, I also know it's like a key to my success. And I own it. I'm proud to be it. I think it is. There's strength and confidence and definite appeal to having height. I feel very lucky to be this tall a lot of the time, not always. But as far as like attractiveness, like it definitely is deemed as, for right. whatever reason, more attractive than or people find it more attractive.
Yeah.
So if that is something you're going to mention, then I would say that, like, it has to be done in a creative way that is personal to that person. And if it makes me laugh, that's even better. This was not a pickup, but I cling to it as a great example, is that I was on a crowded train, mm-hmm. and like I was holding the subway thing, and this like woman, this older woman, was kind of like in my armpit, like looking up at me the whole time. And she said, "You must see a lot of things that people don't like to clean." And I was like, "What?" And she's like, "I'm gonna go home and clean the top of my fridge for you." And I laughed so hard, and I was like, I do see a lot of things that people don't like to clean.
Well, I'm going to go fucking clean my fridge, and then I'm going to sit up there and send you a video.
Then, yeah, that's going to really get me going. But I think that's like, those are the qualities that I would look for. I would like the pickup line version of that.
Well, hey, I'm sure the old lady was really fucking hot, and
so hot. We're actually dating.
Yeah, if you felt anything in your loins, I support that. Well, you're so game for all of my insane questions today, Tim, and I'm so grateful.
Are people
to
not?
You.
I mean, I they should be.
I agree. Thank you. Not all are, but you certainly have been. And so that leads me to the final Gay Ass Podcast question, Tim, which is, if the world was ending, you could only save one character actress, who would you save?
Olivia Colman. I think there's a lot. There's a lot we still need to see from her.
I agree. And you know what? Olivia has been given so many roles and so much respect. But whenever we get like a Gene Smart and Hacks moment for Olivia Colman, we will be happy. We will be complete.
Also, like, how are we going to get Olivia Colman into like the Broadway world, or let's say the musical world? We got to find a way.
Drowsy Chaperone revival.
She's the man in the chair.
Yeah, exactly. She's doing Glenn Close drag as a man in chair.
That is a good idea.
I think we just went into producing.
Yeah, that is a celebrity name that I would, that is worth.
Olivia Colman is man in chair.
Yeah, worth using.
Perfect. Perfect. Tim, thank you so much for your genius answers, for your sexiness, for your Broadway lore. Will you please tell the listeners where they can follow you, and if there's anything you would like to plug at all?
Yeah, you can follow me at Timothy R. Hughes on Instagram. If you ever want to come dance with me, I still run my program called Performer's Puzzle, which we dance live on Sunday nights, but you can take the class whenever you want and from wherever, because I do it live in New York and broadcast it via Zoom.
Hell yeah.
That's it for
so
now.
So we will link
thank
all
you
of
so much
that
for having
in the
me.
Description. Thank you for coming on. And I will see you in our Buddy the Elf tights.
At the lake, at the gay lakes. We'll have Speedos on underneath. And then we can turn it into like a Hanukkah Christmas card. Because if we're going to be kissing Alice, we might as well use it for both holidays.
Thank you for seeing my Hanukkah heritage as well. You really are an ally. Shalom well, to
maybe
you and
I'll,
yours.
Maybe I'll bring my Hanukkah PJs and I can wear those and you can wear
and I'll show you
tights.
My cut cock. That was a joke. Okay. We are
change the rating of this podcast.
We might cut that out, but I wanted to keep it in just in case. All right. God bless you. I'll see you at the Hanukkah bush.
Yes. Where's that? Is it burning?
Thanks for listening to That's a Gay Ass Podcast. I'm so grateful y'all are here. And if you enjoyed the interview with the 6'7 Tim Hughes, leave a review on Apple Podcasts or Spotify. Or if you're watching on YouTube, drop a comment to let me know that you were here. If you would like more bonus content, go to Substack. There's an incredible very horny episode that's with one of my biggest Twitter crushes. Twitter crushes is hard to say. Twitter crushes. Patrick, pat my buns. And the pits are pitting is all I'm going to say. There's also Confession Hole there, my Glory Hole talk show. And it's all happening, Judy's. I love you so much. Stay gay. Bye. You've been listening to That's a Gay Ass Podcast, hosted by me, Eric Williams. If you want to see and hear more, make sure you're subscribed to us on Instagram, TikTok, YouTube, Spotify, Apple Music, or Patreon at Gay Ass Podcast. That's a Gay Ass Podcast is executive produced by Eric Williams and produced by Nathaniel McClure. We'll see you next week.
Hey, baseball fans, it's time to swing big on your bets this season. Step up to the plate with an odds boost token from BetMGM, an official sports betting partner of Major League Baseball. No opt-in is required. Just log into your BetMGM account to receive your odds boost token. Then, place a bet on any MLB game and activate your token. If your boosted bet hits, you'll score a bigger payout, no matter the showdown. BetMGM is your betting home for baseball. Major League Baseball trademarks used with permission. BetMGM and GameSense remind you to play responsibly. See BetMGM.com for terms. 21 plus only. This U.S. promotion offer not available in Mississippi, New York, Nevada, Ontario, or Puerto Rico. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. Available in the U.S. For New York, call 877-8-HOPE-NY or text HOPE-NY-467-369. For Arizona, call 1-800-NEXT-STEP. For Massachusetts, 1-800-327-5050. For Iowa, 1-800-BETS-OFF. For Puerto Rico, 1-800-981-0023. Subject to eligibility requirements. Rewards vary and expire in 1 to 7 days. In partnership with Kansas Crossing Casino and Hotel.